We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got a great show for you today. Unfortunately, we're going to be talking about something that's not so good. Senator Carl Levin passed away this last week, and we're dedicating the show to Senator Carl Levin, of blessed memory. We'll have on his cousin, Mr. Martin Baum, who's a personal friend of mine, and we'll talk about the life of Senator Carl Levin. It's the world lost a mensch this week. In the second half hour of the show, we'll be featuring some insights into the portion of Re'eh, which is the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 11. And Re'eh always reminds me that it's Elul. Elul is the month before Rosh Hashanah, so it's time to start getting ready for Rosh Hashanah. Yay! Who doesn't want to get ready for Rosh Hashanah? We've got wonderful music scattered throughout the show. A great Hasidic story at the end. Stay tuned all the way through. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israel is the first country to start third vaccine shots to those over 60. COVID is on the rise in Israel with the Delta variant. Israel decreased the fishing area off the coast of Gaza from 12 to 6 miles in response to the number of fire balloons launched into Israel from Gaza. Israel did raise the number of Palestinian work permits from 90 to 136,000. Most of them are in the construction sector. Israel's environmental ministry delayed the construction of the United Arab Emirates pipeline to Israel. That's the oil pipeline, citing environmental concerns. The pipeline, part of the Abraham Accords, would give the UAE direct access to the Mediterranean. A swastika was found carved into an elevator at the State Department in Washington. Investigations are underway. In the Olympics in Tokyo, Avishag Semberg won a bronze medal in Taekwondo for Israel. Australian Jewish paddler Jessica Fox won gold in the canoe slalom and bronze in the kayak slalom. And Lilia Achimova won gold for Team Russia in the women's team gymnastics. Federal authorities in New York seized 17 items from a Brooklyn auction house that they suspect were looted from their rightful owners during the Holocaust. No criminal charges are being brought. Auction house owner David Kestenbaum said the articles recovered from the former Soviet Union. Most likely somebody put them in a suitcase when they came out in the late 1980s. They had them with them. Nobody checked. And now finally, 40 years later, they want to sell them. And finally, we may have to get this person on, maybe in the next couple of weeks, President Joe Biden nominated Emory University Holocaust historian Deborah Lifstadt to be the State Department's anti-Semitism envoy. The job of envoy is to monitor acts of anti-Semitism around the world. And that's the news. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Mr. Martin Baum. He is an attorney in the city, lived in Detroit mostly, I'm assuming, most of his life, all of his life. And we're talking about the life of Senator Carl Levin, who was also Marty's cousin. How are you today, Martin?
I'm fine, thank you. Good to be with you.
It is our pleasure indeed. Okay, so now I said in my introduction to the show that to sum up the life of Carl Levin, the way that I see it from the dealings that I had with him is the world lost a mensch. Would you say that was a correct assessment, and did I do him justice?
I think so. I think that's probably the highest compliment, especially in these days of division, that you can say about anybody. And Carl would fit that. Carl was indeed a mensch.
Okay, indeed. Okay, so we're talking about the life of Carl. What do you remember? He was older than you, so as far back as you remember, you had a cousin Carl. So what was cousin Carl like as far as little Marty Baum was concerned?
Well, actually, I only met Carl when they were engaged, and so that would have been, probably 1960, I would say, something along those lines, maybe a little later, a little earlier, because his wife Barbara is actually my first cousin, so Carl is my cousin by marriage.
Ah, okay. So in the 60s. So yes. at that time he wasn't an official. He was a lawyer doing legal things, and
and he stepped into becoming the head of the Michigan Civil Rights Commission, he was just transitioning to that, he was with that for a couple of years, and then he became the appellate section leader of the legal aid
society
organization that we had in Michigan. He was actually a founder, along with Larry Silverman, who went on to become a recorder's court judge, a Wayne County judge. And he was with the Legal Aid and Defender's Office. That's what they called themselves. Probably for another, I want to say, 4 or 5 years, that would take him into the later 70s. And then, of course, he ran for city council. So Carl lived on Litchfield, anyway, in the Green Acres section of Detroit. That would be basically the 8 Mile Woodward area. And we lived in Sherwood Forest, and still do. We live in the same house that we've lived in since 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So Carl was virtually in the next subdivision. Carl and Barbara and their 3 daughters.
Okay, and it was one big happy family. Okay, so
wonderful family. Very
okay,
close.
So what was it you say that was the impetus for Carl? Say he was involved with legal actions and like seems like helping the underdog and the organizations that he chose to align himself with. What was it that was his decision to get involved in politics in Detroit City Council way back when?
Well, I think Carl followed a tradition that was set by his parents, Ted and Bess Levin. When Carl and Sandy were little kids, I'm told, they were working in people's campaigns that their parents were involved in. This is a family of service. I won't be the first to compare the Levin family to a Hamisha Kennedy family, and I use that word Hamisha because family is a big deal for them. Then came service, but the Levin family, and it's not just Carl and Sandy and their sister Hannah that were active in politics since children, but that goes with their cousins as well, Chuck Levin and Joe Levin, who were the children of Bear Levin. That whole family was devoted to service. They were all Democrats. They were all liberal, but they were involved. They were foot soldiers. They weren't just donors and then, you know, would fund various activities. They were down, they were on boots on the ground. And so for, I think it was just a natural progression for Carl and Sandy to both just go right into public service, because they'd probably been doing it since their bar mitzvahs.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually wondering, since you brought it up, I wondered what was it, or why is it that the federal building in Detroit is called the Theodore Levin Building? What was it that Theodore Levin did that he got his name on the federal building?
That's a great question, and one I really don't know the answer to.
Because
he was gone by the time I think I'm right that he was gone clearly by the time I became a lawyer in 1967. So I really can't tell you, but you know, it's just part of a Levin family tradition, and I don't know how long he'd actually been a federal judge, but I understand it was quite a while. So I really can't tell you.
Okay. So now, Carl Levin, in 1977, being on the city council, must have been somewhat of an anomaly. This is 10 years after the riots. Detroit right. is already doing whatever people associate Detroit with doing. Coleman Young is now mayor, doing his Coleman Young things. So how not only did he survive on the city council, he got reelected many times and even served as president of right. the city council until he decided to run for senator. How you were living in Detroit at that time. So tell us about right. the demographics about here, the mindset, the philosophy of Carl Levin as city council person.
With Carl, it's everything Detroit. I'm going to work backwards. They live at 1300 Lafayette. Before that, when Carl was elected, he was living in Green Acres. With Carl, everything was Detroit. Even when he retired, the synagogue that he belonged to was the Reconstruction Congregation of Detroit. When our congregation, Tekiah, was formed, he was a charter member. But when we moved to our Southfield location on 10 Mile, between Coolidge and Greenfield, on what I call the four corners of the Jewish community, because we had the Orthodox were on 10 Mile, we had Temple Emmanuel, we had Beth Shalom, and we had Tekiah, all four branches. When Tekiah moved from downtown Detroit to be closer to the Jewish community, Carl said no. And they formed another, there was a split off, not unusual in religious communities. And Carl stayed with the Detroit group, who called themselves the Reconstructionist Congregation of Detroit, which is recently merged, by the way, with the downtown synagogue. So for Carl, it was Detroit, not just the Jewish community, but the Jewish community in Detroit. And so that tells you really a lot about Carl. It was a natural progression entering politics, run for city council. But because Carl was so well-liked, Carl became, at his second term, he got the most votes. And getting the most votes makes him council president. That's the way the city council in Detroit is set up. So when Carl ended, and Carl, I think, was on two or three terms, altogether about 8 years. I think it's a four-year term, so it may have only been two terms. So when Carl decided to run for the United States Senate, he was up against a formidable opponent. It was Robert Griffin, who at that time was a pretty conservative Republican. By today, he would probably be considered by the Trumpsters to be a flaming leftist. No, a moderate, no. That's how far right the Republican Party had gone.
Okay, we'll talk about
has
that
gone, but not back then. So you're always conservative for the times. So that was a formidable opponent. He was a well-known senator, had been reelected several times himself, that is Bob Griffin. But Carl was up to the task.
And indeed, and he was elected. And when I came to this state in like 1988, so I understood it was like Carl Levin and nobody else when it came to like voting for senators. Just like it was his until he decided it wasn't his anymore.
So, you are correct.
Okay.
So all the other races were relatively easy. It was all downhill in terms of electability. So okay. You're right. He was six terms altogether. Six year terms.
36 years is in the Senate. Okay. So
yep.
So now let's talk about his demeanor and his interaction with people, because Michigan is a purple state. There is a very good balance of Republicans and Democrats. And yet, when it came to his elections, the last four elections that he didn't even have to campaign. So let's talk about Carl Levin, the man that people who would, say, vote for George Bush would also vote for Carl Levin.
Carl was a true man of the people. And here's I was thinking about this when you had called earlier to ask me if we could talk today. Carl is the kind of guy that when there is a dinner somewhere and it's open seating, and Carl wouldn't be sitting on the dais necessarily, but sitting among everyone else, Carl would go to the table where people seem to be a little lost. He wasn't going to sit at the table of the cool kids, okay? Mm-hmm. He's going to be sitting at the table with people who would appreciate having someone of his stature sit with them and talk with them and hear from them. And he was a great listener. And people really appreciated that. He never talked about that. He never said that was his philosophy. This is my observation over years. Carl would not sit at the cool kids' table. Carl would sit at the table of people who could use someone to talk to.
Okay.
And I think that is a parable of a microcosm of how Carl really related to people. He never cared about clothes. We once had a birthday party for him, I think a 75th birthday party for him, and it was at a nice restaurant. It was for his family, staff, and so on. And people were asked to bring a gift for Carl of something he could really use. And you know what the most frequently given item was?
A shirt.
A new tie.
A new tie. Okay.
A new tie. His ties were all spotted. A new shirt would have worked. But I remember the ties. So.
Okay. He was a very unassuming person. I mean, the glasses that he was, like his signature glasses on the end of his nose.
Those glasses. They were only half glasses. You know, they
right.
were readers.
Right.
So, so natural says if you're wearing readers and you don't take them off, that you're going to slide them down your nose a bit. But he put them there. They didn't slide down. That's where they went until he had to read, and then he'd pull them up. But
do you think Chuck Schumer, unless you're talking about glass, do you think Chuck Schumer is emulating Carl?
I've seen that. It could be. Listen, Chuck Schumer, if he was smart enough to do that, would have picked a very good role model.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Mr. Martin Baum. He's an attorney and family member of the recently passed away Senator Carl Levin, who had the distinction of having been senator longer in Michigan than any other person, 36 years at the same position, getting elected six times. And we're talking about the life and times of Carl Levin. So having been like a newcomer, and right in the middle of Carl Levin's terms of office, and knowing that he was involved with the Senate Armed Forces Committee. So the way that I understood it was the reason why he wanted to be chairman of the Armed Forces Committee, of all types of things that he wasn't involved with, and he wasn't a veteran, and military, but it seemed to me that there was something there like with regards to like being on watch for Israel. Was that also part of his philosophy, Martin?
Oh, yes. You know, Carl was not particularly religious. but he was Jewish to his core, as we know people are, even in varying degrees of observance. Israel, Carl was Israel's man in the Senate. Wasn't the only Jew in the Senate, but Carl was Israel's man in the Senate. He had Israel's back. That was never a frontal, a signature piece of Carl's. You're right, it was the Armed Services Committee and then the Permanent Committee on Investigation. The Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations were his two major committees, but there were one or two others as well. But so that he never, because we Jews in supporting Israel in a public way have to be careful. And so because we know that there are people for whom Israel is not a high priority. And in order for Carl to maintain his position of trust and respect so that the programs that he urged, he never fronted that position publicly much, but everyone in the Senate knew it.
Indeed, indeed. Okay. What would you think would be the reason why he, after 36 years, decided, well, I'm not going to be a senator for 42 years?
I think it was he never lost his devotion to public service. But I think as we age, we realize when we hit the wall. After all, when he was 80 or just turning 80, and he was we know that our effectiveness wanes after 80. It's my philosophy or my point of view that it's a crapshoot. Up to age 80, if you've taken care of yourself and exercised and done all the things that our doctors and parents have told us to do, we've got a pretty good chance. But after 80, it's a crapshoot. And Carl was wise enough to know to leave on a high note. How many people have overstayed their usefulness? And I can think of the senators right now who really should have left a while ago. And I'm even talking about a Jewish senator from California. It's time. But everyone wants to think that they can beat the odds. And Carl knew this is the time to leave. I'm not going to be able to do 6 years. Now, remember, this is pre-Trump. Mm-hmm. That is pre-Trump being active in political service. But remember, it was 2015, and those drums were beating. And I think he just wanted to leave it to someone younger. And I thought Gary Peters was just the right guy. Gary, with all due respect, will never be Carl. But Gary is a good guy, a good person. He's got a good neshama. And I think Carl felt that given the array of what's out there, who might take his place, Gary was a good bet. And I think Gary Peters proved him right.
Okay. Now, so the announcement, this is what surprised me. The announcement of Carl's passing was issued by the Carl Levin Center at Wayne State University. And I did some work on Wayne State 10, 12 years ago. There was no Carl Levin Center, as far as I knew about it, because I would have probably been trying to get involved with it. So what was that all about?
Well, Carl did not go to Wayne State Law School. He went to Harvard, as a matter of fact.
Correct. And his undergrad was at Swarthmore.
And his undergrad was at Swarthmore. But again, Carl was a man of the city. Carl was not ready to retire from public life, but he was condensing what he was doing into something more local. He was asked to teach at University of Michigan, and he had a granddaughter at the University of Michigan at the time, so it would have been a natural thing. But Wayne State approached him. And Jocelyn Benson was the dean at the time, now Secretary of State Benson, and approached him about teaching at the law school, which he did, by the way. And then, as there were faculty discussions and so on, it was suggested that maybe Carl's legacy, instead of the 11 library, would be 11 center. And there would actually be courses taught in government oversight, government responsibility, and public service for young lawyers who are being trained at Wayne State. I think it was genius.
Amazing. So that's how that was his legacy then to the Detroit community.
Exactly. And to the legal community.
Wonderful, wonderful. So summing things up, we started out that he was the quintessential mensch. And what else is there to say about Carl Levin, Martin Baum?
Carl will be greatly missed, and he is a model for all of us to emulate about civility, about respect for someone, the other person's point of view. And I think it can be summed up in two ways. Number one, mutual tolerance for other points of view and for foregoing the extreme behavior. If you're battling with someone else, and I'm talking about that in civility and so on, don't go for the jugular.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Don't do what is extreme. You can get more done with honey than you can with vinegar. Carl was an excellent negotiator and a great role model for how things can and should be done.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for this section. Our guest today has been Mr. Martin Baum. He is a longstanding attorney serving the city of Detroit and environs, the greater Detroit community, and related to Senator Carl Levin, who has passed away, and been sharing his insights into the life of Carl Levin. We want to thank you so much for coming on, Marty.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay.
Always good to be with you.
And we wish you nothing but continued success.
Thank you. And the same to you and the show.
Okay. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Up next, let's do some music. This, coming up for your listening pleasure, is Shalom Barinholtz. The song is Hine Lefanecha. Here I am. I'm right in front of you.
Oh,
And that was Shalom Berenholtz, Hine Lefanecha. It's a wedding song. Up next, I just don't know how I find some stuff, but this band has, I've overlooked it. I should have found it a long time ago, but I guess it's the name of the band that throws me off. It's a klezmer band, and it's called, the name of the band is 17 Hippies. Would you like to guess how many people are in this band? This is, it's a big band for a klezmer ensemble. That's huge. The klezmatics, I think, maybe have a 10, maybe, but this is 17. So this is a great song. It's called Der Tranum, which I'm not exactly sure. I didn't get a chance to look up what Tranum means because I only had the English translation and how do we put it back into the Yiddish. Maybe I'll get a chance to look it up. But if you know what Der Tranum means, drop me a line at rabbifinman.com. But in the meantime, let's listen.
Grau nur wie am Strand, die Nacht verliert sich heute wie von selbst. Tiefes Blau, nur Wind und Sand wehen uns ganz leicht von vorne an. Flüchtig schaue ich dich an, greif nach dir und deiner Hand hier am Strand. Uferlos ins helle Morgenlicht. Trinken, was die Zeit nicht heilt, niemals satt und immer viel zu weit. Laufen jetzt dem Fluss entgegen, werden mehr und gehen auf. Keine Tränen fließen, ob es regnen wird. Tränen fließen, ob es jetzt noch regnen wird.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Hey, Herschel Finman, here you go. We are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have time for one more. I really think you're going to like this one. We have next, for your listening pleasure, this is Moshe Tischler, Abba HaGadol, which means my great father, and referring, of course, to God. And this being coming up now, the next week starts, actually next Sunday, starts the Monday, starts the beginning of the month of Elul, when it says that we turn to God and try to get in God's good side. And we'll talk about that next week more, when we're actually in Elul. But it's a good song to listen to, so let's listen to
שבשמיים. אין עוד מלבדו, אין עוד זולתו בארץ ובשמיים. יש אבא גדול, יש אבא גדול, אבא שבשמיים. שמיים אין עוד מלבדו, אין עוד זולתו בארץ ובשמיים. יש אבא גדול, יש אבא גדול, אבא שבשמיים.
We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813. Or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. The Jewish Hour. This week's portion that we'll be reading in the synagogue is the portion of Re'eh. It can be found in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 11 and following. For as much as I can remember, the portion of Re'eh is read the Shabbos before the month of Elul. So we're still thinking, you could still say, wait a minute, we're still in the month of Av, which Av has Tisha B'Av, and Av has Tuba Av, and Av has its own things, of course, ha ha. But intrinsically, the month of Av is already, we're thinking about Rosh Hashanah. It's like, as soon as it became Tisha B'Av, as soon as Tisha B'Av was over, people are saying, oh no, Rosh Hashanah is like, yep. And why is that? Because the month of Av, the word Av, is an abbreviation for Elul Ba. Elul, the month of, the next coming month is coming. And what is Elul all about? Elul is all about getting ready for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, because the month of Elul is one of 2 months that there are no Jewish holidays, the other one being the month after Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, because we need to recover from that month. So we would like to therefore say that the portion of Re'eh is a preparation for the month of Elul, which is a preparation for Rosh Hashanah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there's some obvious, like, stare right at, like, the name of the first, very first verse says, look, I'm giving you a choice, life and death, good and evil. Okay? Choose life, okay? Which refers to the idea of being involved with Judaism and discerning right from wrong, etc. That's an obvious one. But the whole portion, everything that's in here, stuff, there could have been stuff in this week's portion that could have put in last week's portion or the week before's portion. But it's specifically put in this week's portion because of its need to be read at this specific time. One small section I'm going to focus on, it takes up about a half a chapter, and it involves a person who's an apostate who is trying to get people to give up their Judaism. Okay, most people don't talk about this in public, but I'm going to go out on a limb, and if you have any kind of comments or otherwise, you can drop them off at rabbifinman.com. I would love to hear from you. What does it say in the Torah about a Jew who actively pursues taking people away from Judaism, being involved in idolatry? It says that person should be killed. So now, what's the deal with that? That's pretty heavy. That's pretty harsh. That's like, you know, you're talking, you know. But look what this person is doing. What is Judaism? For many years, I was a guest speaker for a high school comparative religions class. And I was brought in to talk about Judaism. It was like for one period, and that's all. It just the teacher was a very thoughtful person. And when she studied each of the world's religions, she brought in a representative of each religion to talk about their religion, which I think that's very nice. You know, why hear it from this teacher who just learned about it in a book? Hear it from a person who lives it. So I was in contact. I was doing it probably for close to 30 years, and COVID shut the class down, and it's not being started up again. But I would start the class, this my presentation to them, with Judaism is a monotheistic religion that... dot, dot, dot. You fill in the blank, whatever you'd like to say after that. But the one given thing in Judaism is it's a monotheistic religion. You can't have polytheistic Judaism. You can't have pantheistic Judaism. You can't have atheistic Judaism. That's not what Judaism is. Judaism is a belief in one God. So anything which is going to, anything, anybody, which has any type of the slightest trace or taint of the opposite of monotheism in Judaism is to be destroyed. We have, for example, something which is not kosher. Let's say pig, everybody knows, you know, you hear from people. I was recently down south, and so somebody talked to me about, we were talking about Judaism a little bit and what this person does, what she does, what I do, whatever. And she said her family runs a smoke shack. And I should, when I'm in town, I should come to their smoke shack. And then she said, oh, I'm sorry, you don't eat pig. It's like she didn't know anything else about, she said, but we have beef and chicken. So she didn't know anything about, she didn't knew nothing about kosher, but she knew that Jews don't eat pig. Okay, the standard given thing. Okay, if pig gets mixed into kosher, okay, I'm not going to give an example, but if pig got mixed into kosher, so if there's 60 times more beef, kosher beef, than there is pig, so the whole item remains kosher. It's considered insignificant. 60 times? Insignificant. If one drop of wine used in idolatrous service, one drop, got mixed into an entire 16-ton vat of kosher wine, the whole thing would be no good. You'd have to dump the whole thing. One drop, 16 tons. You know how big a 16-ton vat is? It's bigger than my house. Because that's how much Judaism is opposed to the opposite of monotheism. It says don't have rachmanis on this person because you think it's my brother. Okay, but you know, so it once, but the di have the uvda, it once happened with me. When I was in Australia, so somebody came in, I was learning with people. It was what I was being paid for was to learn with people. And people would come in off the street to this synagogue, and they'd say, I'd like to learn with somebody. And so I started learning with this person. There was an older person who came up to me and said, you can't learn with that person because he's involved with blank religion other than Judaism. And what he's doing is he's taking what you're teaching him, and he's going to put it and use it for his religion. And I said, but maybe I'll have an effect on him. I'll bring him back to you. He said, Herschel, listen to me. You're not allowed to learn with him. So even so, such a thing that the Torah says, have no compassion on such a person. If such a person makes such a choice, forget about it. Now, most of us don't know anybody involved with idolatry, but the Torah is still relevant. So what has this got to do with us? You've heard me say it before. Everything now, I've said every person mentioned, every figure named in the Torah, and every country named in the Torah. And now I'm saying every philosophy named in the Torah really has something to do with us. And inside of us, there is that aspect of that person. That philosophy that wants to schlep a person from Judaism. There's that something there that just that sort of like says, nah, I couldn't be bothered today. Or I don't feel like it today. Or can't I just sleep a little longer and forget? I'll daven at home. I won't pray in the synagogue. Forget about it. That has to be wiped out. Where is our thrust and our emphasis supposed to be? On being excited about monotheism, that today I get to pray to God, which means I get to host God. I get to talk to God. One God. Not lots and manys that aren't going to listen. Those who have eyes that don't see and ears that don't hear. But the one true God, I get to have a relationship with him. And that's so much better. We have to take a quick commercial break. We've got an awesome story. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest way? RabbiFinman.com. I've been talking about it now since 1994. It's been up since 1994. It's gone through some permutations and changes since then, but it's basically the same thing. What's on RabbiFinman.com? There's a way to contact me right on the front page. There are ways in which we present Judaism and other media, and besides radio, there's archived editions of the radio show going back 4.5 years. And it's a new month. It's August. And with August comes a new bill. And you're listening. You've been listening to the show now for 52 minutes. And I hope you've enjoyed it, because if you didn't like it, I know what happens when something plays on the radio. It could be a song for 10 seconds. If I don't like that song 10 seconds, I'm out. I got 12 buttons on my car radio. And you've listening now for all this time. We need your help. It costs. Broadcasting is not cheap, but we always manage to do it. A little bit here, a little bit there, a $10 donation, a $25 donation, a $100, $180, whatever, you know, thousands of dollars also would help. But do what you can. Go to the computer right now. And you know, since we're getting into Elul, if you're listening to this, so we're already getting into approaching the month of Elul. The month of Elul starts next week. But you don't have to wait. You could start right now, because one of the things which you're supposed to increase before Rosh Hashanah is in your giving of charity. And the Jewish Hour is on part of an umbrella organization which includes Jewish Ferndale and the E-Parsha and various the chaplaincy visitation programs, etc. Lots of programs. It's underneath this one umbrella. And we've only existed because you have gone to the computer and donated. So do that today. Go to RabbiFinman.com, go to the donations page, click on a number, add your number, make it a monthly donation, makes it so it's much easier. So if you can't do one large, do 12 small. That's also fine. Every bit helps. And as the Talmud says, Mamon lahaitzois nitna, money's given for spending. And I can guarantee you, I will not save a penny of the money that you give. It will be spent for all these good things that we do. So do they don't like internet giving? That's fine. Drop your donation in the mail and send it to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. This story happened, I don't know how long ago. It couldn't have been too long ago, because the protagonist in the story, Moshe Weber, I believe he's still alive. And if he's not, then he just recently passed away. But I believe he still is alive. When he was a young man, he was a secretary for Reb Aaron of Belz. We were talking about in Israel, and I think this was immediately after World War II. So it once happened that this Moshe Weber, he went to go teach a class. And he taught this class once a week. And he would take a certain bus at a certain time, and he would go and teach the class and come back by bus. So it once happened that he got there in time, the bus pulled up, packed full, sorry, take the next bus. The next bus came, packed full, sorry, take the next bus. The next bus, this is probably like a half hour later already. The next bus comes, sorry, take the next bus. It's now the fourth bus. He's wondering, Rabbeinu Shalom, Master of the World, what's going on over here? He had never, ever had to wait for a second bus. Now, all of a sudden, must have been a convention or something, a sporting game, something, who knows? That's not part of the story. So he's sitting on this fourth bus, and a young student sat down next to him and said, I understand that you were a masharis, you were a helper for Reb Aaron of Belz. So he said, yeah. So he said, maybe you could share some of the things that were happening with with the Rebbe. So he's telling him different things, different anecdotes. And one story that he said was that there was a person in the World War II, the Nazis of Moshe Zichram, they solicited the services of Jews to help them. They were ones who were in charge of the quotas and for rounding up people. And in the camps, they were the ones who were the servants in the camps. They were called capos. You can look at K-O-P-O. You can look it up in the dictionary. I don't know if the word is used for any other, means any other thing than the person who helped the Nazis in the World War II. Who said, so this Moshe Weber continued, capos, why did they do this? To save their own lives. It was either turn this person over to the Nazis or I get killed. So he said, he's telling this young student that there were people who did it to protect Jews. And he said, there was one person that someone once slighted to Reb Aaron and said, that guy was a capo. And Aaron said, don't talk about him. He was instrumental in saving my life, and he would never do anything in his capacity. He became a capo in order to protect Jews. The man was a saint. Okay, that was the end of the story. 2 days later, this Reb Moshe got a call inviting him to an engagement party. He says, I don't know you. He said, please, you have to come. Okay, so he shows up at this engagement party. He says, "You don't." The host, the father of the bride, says, "Let me tell you a story." He says, "I was sitting behind you on the bus when you were telling stories about Reb Aaron of Belz, and a match had been proposed with my daughter and a certain young man. And someone said, you know, that guy's grandfather was a capo, and I was gonna break off the wedding. No, daughter of mine's gonna." Until I heard your story. So we see the divine providence. Moshe Weber implies the divine presence. He had to miss 3 buses and get on the 4th bus just to give a good report so that somebody could get married. That's going to do it for the show. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
התחיל היום דף חדש אבל פתאום מרגיש שזה לא היום שלך קשה לך תנשום לא, לא אל תתבלבל מזה פשוט